Good to see you. It's been a while.
Same.
Hey, Peggy, how are you? 7 p.m. on the dot. We're going to get started calling to order the January 20th, 2021 meeting of the Local Ethics Commission. Calling the roll, Chair Daly.
Here.
Commissioner Gnofo.
Here.
Commissioner Sinnott.
Here.
All right. All are present. Chair Daly, I'm in the room here at Village Hall, and there's nobody here with me, and there's none others in the line, so I take it that we have no citizen comment, and we could hear a motion to approve the meeting minutes of November 4th.
Somebody would like to make a motion?
I move to approve the meeting minutes of November 4th.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, let's vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Great. I do not have the agenda in front of me. So if you can drive the chain a little bit in front of the agenda, that would be great, John.
Yep. And the next item is really our only item, which is to continue the discussion regarding the review of the ethics code. Village Attorney Greg Smith's on the line tonight. Chair Daly and I spoke earlier today. I was able to grab Greg at last minute, but he's only got about 15 minutes for us tonight. So I figured we'd jump right in with that.
Absolutely.
And then let him be back. So
absolutely. And I want to thank you for all the hard work I can see that you put into this. And I really appreciate it, as you know, everybody has put in a lot of work on this. And I think we're getting really close to the finish line. I thought it would be helpful when I opened this up. I thought it would be helpful. Let's have Attorney Smith sort of give us the overview of what he did and why. So that he can go through these edits, these red lines with us. And then I think that'll cut short a lot of us, you know, conversation about trying to figure that out on the back end without the explanation. So if you could just kind of go through the, you know, what are the big changes? Because I know sort of the, maybe some of the big themes play out in lots of red lines. And it's really sort of, if you can just kind of go through what things were sort of the key changes here. And then if we can follow along with the red line, that'd be great. I don't think it'll take long, any longer than what we've allotted.
Great. Yeah, well, and thank you very much. It's nice to see you all, Chair Daly. I know Greg, Ms. Sinnott, nice to meet you on Zoom, hopefully in person next time. So when I was handed the draft of the ethics ordinance that the commission had worked on collaboratively, my main goal was to synthesize the three sets of comments that the members had put together and come up with a draft that got you closer to where I think you wanted to be, knowing that the document that I produced is still a work in progress. It's still a draft, of course. This is ultimately your document, not mine. My job is to just kind of get it in the closer in the form that you would expect to present it. And there are a couple substantive changes that I recommend you consider as we go forward. So I think it's easiest if we just do a page turn on the Village Attorney Revisions to Ethics Commission draft that's in the header of 1-12-22. It's page 4 of 34 of the PDF packet. Do you have that document in front of you?
Oh, I've got, I had just opened up the red line for the Ethics Committee draft. Okay. So let me.
I think that's the version you're referring to, Greg.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's up at the top of each page is labeled Village Attorney Revisions to Ethics Commission draft.
Correct. That's what I've got open. Yep.
Good. Okay, great. So, there was some excellent suggestion that we do a preamble and reference the key ethics laws. So I created a preamble stating that the purpose of what River Forest is doing is to go beyond existing law and to exceed it. And that if we haven't exceeded it, then the most stringent ethics requirements are applicable in the village, right? This is certainly true. It is a legally correct statement to say that, but we may as well say it so people remember that. And then I came up with this list of A through H of significant municipal related sources of ethics laws. They're not in any particular order, except as they came to mind and I was drafting it, I put them on this list, okay? I didn't go into the federal case law. I didn't go into the state regulations. I thought, let's focus on state laws, which is mostly what I interpret in my role as municipal attorney for ethics stuff. If there's others that you want added here, let's throw them in. I think I captured pretty much all of it. Next on the definitions, the main change here As noted in my comment on page 2 of this draft, you see the green text that was struck out, is I took the concept of a covered individual, which the commission had said, let's lump in all elected officials, all village staff, and all contractors or people who want to do business with the village, and break them down into three groups. And let's call contractors contractors. Let's call elected officials and commissioners like yourselves village board members and commissioners. And then let's have the broader idea of village covered individuals, meaning village board and commissioners plus staff and other appointed officials, because some of the ethics requirements in here apply to contractors, but not to elected officials and commissioners and vice versa. So a lot of the changes that you see were my effort to try to come up with application of these concepts to the correct group of people whose conduct control and regulate, okay? I spent a lot of time, many hours on this draft. If I miss something, if you don't think that I calibrated the application of a certain requirement to the right group, great, let's talk about it. Let's redline it, let's keep working on the draft. But that was probably the biggest single substantive change, was to more granularly define who the ethics requirements applied to instead of just a broad brush.
And where are the definitions for, and I may just be missing it. Oh, never mind. I was just missing it. No, that's all stricken. If this version that I'm seeing, it says that you're, what you just said, which is you're going to split it into separate definitions, village covered, village board, and contractors. I see contractor definition up there. Yep. Correct when I go back to village, when I look for the definition for village, it looks as if that's all been stricken out.
It's hard to read because of the way the red line is formatted, but on page 5, if you look at the words that aren't stricken, village board members and commissioners defined means each of the village president, village clerk, member of the village, this red line is really difficult. Members of the board of the village and members of commissions of the village. And then you have village covered individuals, means each of the village board members and commissioners, appointed officers, commission members, volunteers, and employees of the village. So that village covered individuals gets you into your employees at Village Hall, right? And then other people who the village uses on a volunteer basis as well.
I'm trying to see how I can kind of read that, because this is like probably the biggest thing that we're doing here. Normally I can do a view and just look at it as, you know, without the markup, but somehow.
I thought Jonathan provided 1, 2, 3 different versions.
I'll look at that. I don't want to blow through your time.
I was about to say the one without the red line is on there. Here, let me share screen.
Okay.
So that we can all, there we go, sharing screen.
Okay, great. I want to be mindful of your time. So that's one big substantive change. This way we can kind of, I've got the red line in front of me, and then we can look at this on the screen.
Great. Yeah, so we'll thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so thank you for pulling up the clean version there. So then just continuing through the red line, you know, you'll see references to the three groups of regulated individuals throughout the draft, right? And that's kind of the main, you know, the main substantive changes were more carefully parsing through who's covered by these requirements. For instance, there's ethics requirements for to not abuse your public office. Well, only office holders have an office that they could abuse. So that only applies to village board members and commissioners, because as a contractor for the village, your waste hauler doesn't hold office, they can't abuse it, right? Instead, we hold them to different requirements as a contractor. So the changes getting down into the substance of the ordinance, starting on page 5 under prohibited political activities, and then moving through the gift ban requirements on pages 6, 7, and the top of 8 really remain substantively unchanged from what the commission proposed, except for cleanups again on the applicability of the requirements. So if you find that in a certain case, you think I didn't cut it quite right in that we should be broadening or narrowing the scope of these requirements. Let's talk about that, right? There's no pride of authorship. I just tried to, you know, more carefully parse these things out. There's probably room for improvement. So happy to talk about that. And moving into the ethical standards on page 8, this is now section 5 of the ordinance. This is kind of the meat and potatoes of the ethics ordinance, right? These are the more significant ethics requirements beyond prohibited political activities and gift ban. And here what I did is just cleaned up the language on, in terms of applicability, in terms of coverage. And the ethical standards on page 9 in section C on this part of the ordinance. And thank you so much, Ms. Senat, for scrolling through. That's
oh, no problem. Helpful.
And sorry, my page references are to the red line. And so I know I'm a little off for your clean. The idea here was to more carefully, again, parse through who these requirements applied to. Like, for instance, a good example under C3, respect for process. Here, I propose that we tie village board members and commissioners to perform their official duties in accordance with process and rules of order established by the village governing deliberation of public policy, meaningful involvement of the public, and implementation of those things by staff, right? Because the board and the commissions are the ones that do those things, not contractors and not staff.
Can I guess I've got a big question, which is, we've got two definitions, village board members and commissioners and village covered individual. What is the difference between those two? Because I'm seeing village covered individual quite a bit and not so much village board members and commissioners. So,
right. Yeah. So here you have village board members and commissioners is a narrower definition. It means the elected officials and anyone who serves on a volunteer commission, including the three of you. Mm-hmm. Village covered individuals includes all of the people I just described, plus employees, plus other officers.
Got it.
Chiefs of police and fire, plus volunteers of the village.
Got it. Okay, that's really helpful.
It's on page 4 of the clean version.
Yeah, I'm just trying to, you know,
right,
play along with as we go through this. All right, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And so going back to section 5 of the ordinance, let's see here. I'm just trying to pick out if there's some other substance. Section C9, if you could scroll down a little more in the clean, please. We have this concept that if you're a village covered individual or contractor, so this is broad application, you can't appear before the board on behalf of the private interests of third parties, right? So as your lawyer, I can't go find a client who needs a variation from the village board and then say, hey, I'm going to help them get a variation. But I think the last sentence here is important, which is that if you are a village covered individual or a contractor, you can appear on your own behalf, right? If you want something. Sure. So we don't want to prohibit the three of you from asking for zoning relief on your own behalf.
Right, exactly. Yep.
So just a little tweak there. I've seen other communities get tied up on that in their ethics ordinances. So I wanted to make that improvement for you.
No, it's a good change. We're all homeowners here. We may have reasons to.
And yep. Greg, that wouldn't stop an employee of the village representing a village application.
Correct. That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
That's right. Because it looks at third parties, John, the private interests of third parties. So the village as the applicant is not within the scope of that.
Okay.
And then if we look at, let's see here, section E, if you could scroll down a little bit, please, in the clean, I added the village board in the last sentence, a new concept that I borrowed from the Ethics Commission, which is that, you know, the Ethics Commission has, I think, currently a 6-month statute of limitations, right? The village board has no statute of limitations for the things that are within their control. I thought, if you're going to do 12 months on yours, why don't we also add a 12-month statute on what the board is doing? You know, and this will also cut down on the potential weaponization of an ethics ordinance for political purposes. If a new board can't relitigate things that happened years ago under an old board, let's say, something that, you know, ethics at its worst is a political tool, right? So we want to stay above the board on that, of course.
Well, hang on. Let me think about that. Well, let's put in, I don't want to, I'm just going to put a note on that for our discussion. I want you to get out of here when you can, since we nabbed you at the last minute.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's see, another new section is section 6. If we scroll down a little bit, the duty to report. This was something that I think all of you noted in your red lines on the ordinance. You all wanted to see it. So I drafted this broadly to include everyone, village covered individuals and contractors who do not have a duty to report violations of the chapter under some other legal requirement, basically. This is your catch-all for duty to report. And it requires the reports if you have knowledge, which again, you may want to look at, is knowledge the right standard, you know, to trigger the requirement to go to the village administrator, or if the administrator is the target of the complaint, then to the village president with the complaint.
Great.
And just so you're aware, John had turned up some village policies that apply within the police department, for instance, and across the fire department and the whole organization on certain kinds of complaints, like sexual harassment type complaints. The processes in those policies would apply separate from this. This is meant to be the catch-all, apart from the employment-related policies the village may otherwise have in place.
Okay.
And then, let's see, under the Ethics Commission portion of the ordinance here, under section B1, I added the scope of the commission's, of the complaints that the commission is authorized to hear. Under the current ordinance, the village board hears complaints of the violation of the ethical standards that we talked about a minute ago, and the Ethics Commission has the other kinds of complaints under gift ban and prohibited political activities. In section 3, I added some language here about the commission shall act only upon receipt of a signed written complaint plausibly alleging a violation of the chapter. The plausibility requirement is one that you may want to talk about. You know, what if someone files just a complete garbage piece of paper? Do you even want to have to accept that as a valid complaint? That's something for you to decide. You could tilt in favor of receiving all complaints and giving them some kind of a look. You know, if someone said the police officer ran over my dog and I think that was unethical, do you even want to kick off a process, right? That's what the word plausibly is meant to do, a screening function.
Is there any kind of legal definition for plausible that would give some guidance? I mean, typically what I see is, you know, if something is anonymous and unsupported, then, you know, I've seen various, internal organization, you know, internal functions like audit or so forth say, I can't pursue this because I don't know who did it and there's no supporting information. That may be plausible, but plausible to me, you know, it would be helpful if there was a legal definition. Is that pulled out of that? Is that a legal concept, or is that just, you know, read it as the common person would?
Yeah, I meant it more in the common sense. You know, this is certainly an area for refinement. I think this section of the ordinance is one that the group is probably going to spend a lot of time talking about, right? How do you want your process to be triggered? When does your jurisdiction attach? And so I wanted you to have the ability to screen complaints to determine, is this something we could even act on or not? You know, and so it may be better to amend that, pull it out, you know, whatever the group wants to do. It's something for further discussion. Absolutely.
Okay.
Then the commission had language that it shall act, and this is still in the same section, upon receipt of a signed written complaint alleging a violation or upon reasonable belief a conduct materially breaches this ordinance has occurred. The commission was basically proposing that it could self-initiate a complaint. I think, and I talked about this with Chair Daly at one point, that in my opinion, if a commissioner wants to pursue a complaint, they can't file a complaint and be the judge and jury at the same time on the Ethics Commission. I think that you would have to recuse yourself, right, if you were the one initiating the complaint. So putting the commission in the position of being the charging agency and the one investigating and trying and deciding the case, I think that runs across some due process lines. I don't think the commission should be initiating complaints itself. I think that if you believe there's been an ethics violation and no one else is willing to file it, you can do so and recuse yourself from the deliberations and the decision-making on that and involvement with it. But I don't like the idea of the commission being a charging agency itself.
You know, the only problem with that is the minute somebody does that, then we no longer have a quorum and nothing can happen. And, you know, we could be reading in the newspaper, let's say it's McCook, and the FBI has showed up and has pulled out, it's in the Tribune, it's everywhere, and we can't do anything, right? We can't investigate something that's common knowledge, that's in the newspaper. And if I think that we should do that, I have to recuse myself, and I have nothing vested in the investigation. It's not a personal situation. It would be, hey, this is in the newspaper, right?
Peggy, I thought our quorum was just two people.
So let's say you file.
Yeah, quorum is two people. So if you file something, then you'd recuse yourself, but Commissioner Ignofo and I would still be able to deliberate.
Yeah. My experience had been in serving on the other ethics boards that if you could initiate, it's not that you're proposing that there is in fact any kind of an allegation that is true. It's this stuff is in the newspaper. We should probably take a look at it, right? That mm-hmm. was deemed as enough of a validity to start an investigation. You know, at the end of the day, if something becomes at that level, other people will, I would presume, bring it forward. But that's the concern that I have, is that you basically, it forces you to stick your head in the sand regarding, things that are common knowledge, and else mm-hmm. you can't do the job that you've been asked to do. So it's something for us to think about.
Yeah. Also, Greg, again, thank you. I'm sorry that I'm laid up in my bed right now, but I dislocated my knee and I have surgery scheduled for tomorrow. That is why I'm not sitting at a desk. I guess I could have made the background look like a desk, but what's the point? Anyhow, I know that your presentation and your time is limited. Are we still allowed to ask you questions afterwards?
Yes, absolutely.
Would you be willing to come back to another meeting so that we can talk more fully?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, absolutely. Great. Yeah, I can extend out to about 7:30 and then I've got a hard stop. I'm sorry about the limitations on my availability tonight, but
don't apologize.
We're excited that you're here. It's easier to talk things out rather than going back and forth via email. So that's why
we're doing narrow work at the last minute. So
agreed.
Let me stop interrupting you. I'll be quiet. And you can keep going.
So on this issue, just consider this kind of basic hypothetical or analogy, and you can pick the analogy and, figure out what you want to do with it, and we can have follow-up conversation later. How would you feel about appearing before a judge who is going to decide whether or not you violated the law when the judge is the one who accused you of violating the law?
Well, that's the
inherent tension in the commission being the initiator of a process, which is also deciding the outcome of, right?
Definitely put that under consideration. That was a good example. We'll put that into consideration.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, and let's see here. Another change in section, what is this? C2, the last sentence in response to the commission's request for support is that the village administrator shall assign staff to support the commission in the discharge of its duties. I think Greg said, hey, how are we supposed to get certified mailing out in time? Who's going to actually do these things? The idea here is that staff will be with you to do these things. That staff is here, right? So, okay.
Yeah.
Otherwise.
Can I ask you a quick one, Greg? On five, C5. Mm-hmm. It's B5.
Okay.
You have to compel attendance of village-covered individuals and compel production of books. And I know you didn't add that, but I wanted your thoughts on it. When you say, when we say compel attendance, are we talking about testimony? Are we entitled to, make inquiry of, and are we entitled to answers under oath? Is that what do we mean by attendance, and what's your take?
Yeah, so I think that this is what gives you the authority to issue something akin to a subpoena, right? The word subpoena is not here. This is legacy language. But the idea is that if you tell either the target or a key witness, you must appear or you must supply us with these materials, and they don't, then they violated your ordinance, right? And that itself is a violation of the ordinance. And, you know, you could consider an enforcement action and say to a judge, and I know the county has battled, and inspector generals in Chicago and the county and elsewhere have battled over similar language, right? Can you, what can you force? This is meant to be a tool to get people to show up, or else threaten them. You know, hey, we're going to ring you up for a violation of the ordinance for not compliant.
Okay, great. I don't know if we need to be more clear as far as attendance and testimony, testify, you know, they can show up, but that doesn't necessarily mean they have to answer questions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I see right. You've eliminated the constitute grounds for discipline or discharge on this particular one. Mm-hmm. I'm presuming it's because this board doesn't have anything to do with the hiring and firing of village employees. But the concern I have is that, is there anything in the employee contracts or the law that would allow the village to then terminate someone who refused to comply with this?
Yes, and that language is in the final section, the penalties section, subsection B, which talks about violations by any village covered individual or who knowingly violates this chapter or files frivolous complaint is subject to discipline, discharge, or removal from office, as Perfect. The case may be. And Great. Then contractors, I added in language while we're here, that would allow the village board to determine that the contractor is no longer entitled to do business with the village, basically a bar.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and it belongs under penalties. That's much tighter writing.
Right.
I know you have a hard stop. Let me ask you something high level.
Sure.
Where is this version watered down from what we had?
I think if you're trying to see where it's been watered down, it's probably in the complaint initiation process that we talked about.
Okay.
That's one place. Additionally, I try to be fair with the applicability of these requirements to contractors in particular, right? Because I think through the lens is I'm an officer as a village attorney, but I'm also a contractor because I submit bills for my time. I think I got it all right, but someone should double check and make sure that, hey, Greg, I think contractors should have to do this thing, even though you propose it's only village covered individuals. Otherwise, I don't think there's much watering down that's occurred. The changes were mostly, you know, and it's all here in plain red line for you to see.
This is great. I want to let you go unless anybody has a question for your final 2 minutes.
One of the things that I had put in my red line version was my fear of overstepping the First Amendment. Did you take an analysis or a review of some of those politically protected activities that people can do? You did? Okay, wonderful.
I did. And I included the language from your comment in the definition of political activity. By definition, it excludes activities which the village can't regulate. I love that language. You're welcome. Also, there is a state law that protects the rights of local government employees in particular from engaging in First Amendment political activities on their own time. I haven't bolted that statute into this exception, but I'm aware that it exists. So there is independent protection as well from retaliation, for instance, if on your own time you support the challenger as opposed to the incumbent.
Right.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. We really appreciate
more question. When is a good time to have you back?
Yeah.
Are you normally free on a Monday, a Tuesday, a Wednesday, a Thursday?
Yeah. I was going to ask when your next meeting is. Mondays and Tuesdays, I pretty much got night meetings scheduled with village boards that I work with. Thursdays are better, not first Thursdays. I've got another obligation. So when's your next meeting?
Sounds like it's going to be the second Thursday.
Okay. Yeah. And honestly, Greg, we've been meeting on Thursdays at 6, but we've jumped around in the weeks based on availability and just the few times that we've met. You know, I do have my eye on the fact that the village board meeting in February, if we wanted to get to it, would be February 28th. So if we wanted to have an interim meeting to try to wrap this before then go to the village board, we could.
We're so close. We're so close, I think, to getting this done. I think we should try to do that. So I can be available.
February the, Yeah, the 10th perhaps, or
yeah,
17th. 17th might work better for me because I'm not sure if I'm going to need that whole week to recover from the surgery. So I just want to make sure that I have enough time to review all of the red line and compare and make sure that any questions that we give you, you have enough time to respond.
Great.
Yeah, that works for me. With me. They're both fine with me.
Okay.
Is February 17th good with you too, Greg?
Yes.
And do you mind if we keep it at 7 p.m. or do we have to move it earlier?
That's what I was going to ask. What do you guys want to do?
I'm flexible. Doesn't matter.
It's all the same to me.
I don't know if 6 p.m. is difficult for you. I can tell you, Greg and I always appreciate earlier as we go back to our families. I don't know if 6 p.m. would work for you guys or not.
Yeah, I'm working from home. Well. So six currently in my mind will work for me.
Excellent. I'm going to put down February 17th at 6 p.m.
Okay.
Excellent.
Great.
Thank you.
Oh no, that works. Yeah, that works. I'm sorry. I'm going to be an adjunct professor, and I just remembered it's on Thursdays from 6 to 9, but it doesn't start till March, so we're good.
Thanks, good. Greg.
Great. Right, thank you all very much for your time. Take care.
Thanks, Greg.
Great work. It's tight. Well done. Really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you for the kind words. Appreciate it. Have a good night.
Okay, I have one concern just off the top of, and I, number one, I do think we're really close. I think we need, you know, we've moved this quite far along. The only concern off the top of the bat of what I'm seeing here that I have is the requirement that any complaint must be signed, because there are often very legitimate complaints that can come in without a signature. That you could have a stack of documents that are provided by, let's say it's some employee or someone else who says somebody's been stealing and here's all the evidence, but they're concerned about retaliation. And typically what you do when you're doing that type of work, whether it's a fraud audit or anything, is you examine the complaint in its totality. Certainly the fact that someone has not signed it is a problem. And 90% of the time, you would no longer go forward, because if somebody can't testify, then what are you left with? But there's all kinds of circumstances under which they have provided you with documentary evidence that shows that there's a violation, and it's not important that you know who provided it.
I don't think that the signature part requires us to have it as pink, you know, ink and pen. I think the signature can still be digital, so, or electronic.
No,
so.
I'm just saying it can be anonymous. This is prohibiting us from starting an investigation on any anonymous complaint, despite it being completely substantiated with documentation. And that's not standard procedure. That is not how it works in business. It's not how it works in government. It's not how it works in general. If you have a substantiated complaint, documented complaint, but it's anonymous, you can almost always still go forward if it's otherwise documented. You know, here's 10 years of financials. There's fraud going on. You don't need to know that it was the secretary that sent it to you. But this, the way it's written, would prohibit us from investigating anything unless somebody signed it with their name. That's a problem. But that's really the only thing that I'm seeing off the top of my bat. I do need to spend a little more time with this, but.
Yeah, I think I followed you too, but just to be clear, could be anonymous, but still would have to be substantiated, documented, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's,
if you're the recipient of hotline complaints, right, you typically will have an assessment tool as to whether or not they're reliable complaints. They're reasonable. They're things that a reasonable person should say we should investigate. And number one thing is somebody has signed it. It's not anonymous, and you can talk to them and ask them questions. So the vast majority of complaints that come in that are anonymous, nobody ever investigates because of that fact. But there are circumstances under which a complaint is documented and you don't have, and but it's anonymous and you move forward because somebody has provided you with all the documentation that shows that what they're claiming is, you know, could be true. So that's the concern.
You're asking for a limitation in the sense that we will do it if we can do it without the consent, but we won't do it if we need your consent type thing.
Consent doesn't have anything to do with
it. I'm saying in the signature, like releasing a person's name versus not releasing the person's name. In the
they may not have a name.
We might need them as a witness in order to substantiate the documents that we received versus not needing them as a witness to substantiate the documents that we received.
I'm just saying that you can instigate an investigation under an anonymous complaint to the extent that the commission finds that the complaint, even though it's anonymous, is documented and worthy of investigation.
Yeah, I think that the inclusion of sign probably from the legacy draft this came from was to prevent off-the-wall complaints from taking up the commission's time and being investigated. But Greg added the word plausibly alleging a violation. And with that addition, you kind of take away the concern of having an unsigned or anonymous complaint because you're not going to just be sent on a wild chase. So I think we can strike the word signed from it in this current draft because it's a written complaint plausibly alleging a violation, and that should be good enough to get this going.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not sure I'm in love with plausible, and I want to take a look between now and then our next meeting what some of the other ethics codes use as a standard for initiating. Because here's the thing, you can assess every complaint that comes in and should assess it, right? But the minute you take a look at it, many of them, and by the way, I'll say that this commission hasn't investigated anything in 20 years. but if you look at it and it says, there's an ethics violation because so-and-so was mean to me on the phone, right? Well, you take that in and you go, yeah, we're not investigating it. We've investigated it. It doesn't reach the violation. We're done. We move on. Done, right? So there's the difference between what you can initiate and what kind of investigation you're going to undertake. It shouldn't prevent us from assessing a complaint that it's anonymous. So I think we're in agreement, and I think the board is charged in acting reasonably no matter what. Right. So you got that requirement that it would have to be. And I want to find the right language because it exists in other places. And I'm worried about that plausible language, maybe having some effect that we don't know. I don't want to get sidetracked with somebody saying that it wasn't plausible. Therefore, you shouldn't have looked into it right at the beginning. I think we should have the right to assess any complaint that comes in and act on it in a reasonable manner. So I just want to look to see what some sister municipal codes say.
Well, on this. On that point, this plausibility threshold.
Yeah.
Because the way it's written, it says, if we don't have the word plausible in there, it's it's receipt of a written complaint, if we strike signed, alleging a violation, that's the commission shall act upon that. And then it says later, within 10 business days of receipt of a written charge, which is the complaint, we shall send by certified mail, and it kicks off this course of events that has to happen.
Yeah,
and we don't
right.
want to do that if we're like, this isn't even a plausible complaint.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There has to be a way in. There's, it seems as if we're missing a step here, right? Then, and there's a complaint, and then there should be, we can assess whether or not it's substantiated or plausible, and then kick in the next process. There's got to be some independent assessment that comes in. Just because it's a written complaint doesn't mean the train leaves the station. So I think that there's ways for us to both broaden the scope of what we can look at in terms of this anonymous stuff and shut down a lot of other things before we get to this larger process. So I think some of the other codes address that. I don't want to bake in more process. Oh, here we go. What do you got? I'm looking at the...
I went back to the old school law school ways. Black Law Dictionary suggests a definition elsewhere in its definition of colorable, a synonym for plausible in legal parlance, that which is in appearance only and not in reality what it purports to be, hence counterfeit, feigned, having the appearance of truth. So I think that when we're able to identify that there's a hole in the complaint, the word plausible will get us out of that hole.
Okay. You're moving me here.
I mean, when you go into the legal definition and how it would be necessarily debated, I don't want to use the word argued, but debated, I think that would be the easiest way, is just to look at what is the common definition that we can come up with that people will understand that word, and then people will understand, we saw a hole, this was the hole, that way it's no longer, the allegation is fake. And because it's, you know, not, it's fake, we're not going to investigate it. We're not going to put the time and energy into it.
Well, that was why I was asking him about the legal definition of plausible, because as you all well know, right, the common parlance and how things have been determined under the law are different. Right. And so I want to make sure that we're using the right adjectives to make sure that we're not inadvertently limiting or expanding our scope.
You know, and I think honestly, we can drop a footnote in there in order to define plausibly, just to make sure that people don't get it mixed up. Since this is one of the words that we're considering at this point is plausibly, we can certainly drop a footnote in there in order to articulate what we mean, and that way that they won't get confused.
Yeah, we're not in fresh waters here. There are lots and lots of these kinds of codes. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to see what Cook County and the City of Chicago have on this issue, and it shouldn't be hard to pull, because there's already going to be probably case law that has defined some of this. I mean, my good God, the Cook County Code has been litigated up to the Supreme Court multiple times. So I just want to, if we're going to use a word that has legal import, that has everything to do about what our scope of our duties are, I want to know what it's going to be, you know, what its import is, if somebody objects to it. Okay. But see, this is what you're doing for me, which is the dictionary. But I want to see I promise I will look at that and see, because I think that's really critical, because it's basically saying, this is the dividing line, plausible or not plausible, right? It's inherently subjective, right? But we should know what the scope is. Anyway, what do we do for next steps? I think we have a couple weeks. How about, what I'd like to do is get to a next version where we can accept these changes, and then maybe we've got 2, 3, 4 items or whatever, after we have a little more time to go through them, that we want to figure out. So I'm trying to figure out what the best next step in terms of this, because I'm looking at this red line and I'm thinking I could just go accept, and we could come up with a document that's got you know, only a couple little nits and nets that we might want to still discuss, which we can knock out at the next meeting and then be done with it.
Try to get what we did last time, where we actually just, because honestly, I was working all day because I'm going to go to my surgery tomorrow. Yeah. So I would like an opportunity to review the 12 pages.
Me too.
And then what I'd like to do is come up with the list of things that I have questions and kind of forward it to John like we did last time, and then have it sent to you. And that way we can put our list of questions together, get it to Greg, Greg can try to answer those questions before we meet on the 17th at 6 p.m. Is that something we could do?
I think so. What I'd like to do before we get there, though, is to have, if there's sections here that we can all agree on, like if the only questions that we have are on section B and section F and section G, I'd like to go through and accept all the red lines for the other sections so that we walk into the next meeting with a document that's been moved forward from, you know, this kind of messy red line, particularly because like I'm looking at this and I don't think any of us have an issue with the preamble. I want to read it again to make sure, but I think there's big parts of this where we can just accept it. And I'd love to get that part of this process done if we can before the next.
Do you want to do that this evening?
I want to read it too.
Okay. I was like,
it's not just you. That's why I asked him to be here because, you know, there was so much redlining here. And, you know, I took the time that I had to look at it and I just thought, oh my God, I just need him to explain to me what he did and where it's watered down, you know, because those are the big questions that I have, right? Like what's the reason for the formatting change? And I could piece most of it together because it was making it better and more coherent and putting things where they belong. So that all made sense. But I wanted him to give me the big picture before I spent more time on this, because I just didn't want to be running down, you know, rabbit holes, trying to piece it together on my own, because it's very time consuming. So it was helpful to have, I wanted him to be able to explain it first. So that's why we did what we did, which, you know, I think was worthwhile. What do you think, Greg? How would you like to proceed?
I'm sorry, I was just trying to, I'm still struggling on the distinction between village board members and commissioners and village covered individuals. That's how I was while you guys were talking, I was kind of reading that over and over again, just because I don't think we need to separate the two, because I don't want to, and I know I'm segueing here onto something else.
No.
I don't want to create a loophole inadvertently somewhere because we put in village covered individuals and now there's the situation where it's village board members and commissioners that it applied to. I think that those, they can all be in the same bucket and contractors could be in a separate bucket.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And that's why I want to go through it, because I want to see what slipped over here and what slipped over there, because we were very clear that we wanted everything to apply to everybody. But he's right that there's certain things that are really only applicable to elected officials. He's not wrong about that at all.
No, not at all. But he's not wrong. But there's other things, too, where we talk about, you know, there's, well, we can get into the nitty gritty, I think, another time. But I think we all should maybe go through it and come up with our list of talking points. And
I agree.
Way we, because you know what? 75% of all our talking points are probably going to be the same.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, I think, so let's do this. Can we each kind of agree that we have homework in a week, we'll go through this and then exchange.
I can't agree to that. Sorry.
Well, when you can.
You know, I want to be reasonable and I want to be helpful, but going to be out of work.
I get it. Recovering. No, I'm sorry.
And I want to continue to participate. And that's why I said, is there a way that we can try to extend it to at least the 10th, where we can go through each one of the sections. Absolutely. And put our comments and notes. And then we can, at the beginning of the meeting that Gregory comes to, we'll go ahead and immediately vote. And then we can just, you know.
Maybe, do we want to have two meetings? We could have one on the 10th where we go through our stuff and then go.
Did you see my face, Peggy? Yeah.
I'm just spitballing here. I'm trying to figure out what works. I completely wasn't thinking about your surgery and you can get you can have as much time as you need. Right.
Thank you.
Peggy, I don't mean to put us up against an artificial deadline of the 28th. That's just the next meeting.
I can tell you, Kathy wants it done. Kathy wants it done, and I think we can get it done, and we should shoot to get it done. I think it's, we've got the document here. I know if I spent 2 hours on this, accepting the things that I can accept and dropping in my notes, I know I could say, wait a minute, here's the five things that are problematical for me.
Okay.
So I would like to get it done. You know, this is not a process that should keep slipping. And we can get it done. So what makes the most sense? Do you want to buy the 16th? Get back notes and comments, or we want to give it to them in advance, or how do we?
Do you guys want to plan for a meeting on the 16th? Just to, go over our comments and maybe all agree to just have them in by February 11th so that they can be dropped in the same document, and then we can meet on them on the 16th. I mean, do you think?
Works for me, but I'm not the one who's.
No, I know, that's what I'm. How's that going to play up to the surgery? You think that's
far out? You want written comments by the 11th, we'll vote on it on the 16th, and on the 17th, we'll still meet with Greg. So we're going to meet twice in 1 week.
Well, I'm just trying to, because I don't want him to have to spend an hour listening to us.
No, I agree with you. I don't think that it would be helpful, but that's why I wanted to put it in writing. So I would have an opportunity to articulate where I saw what the original language was, what the change language was, what the rationale that I understood, and then put in comments, basically, do I approve it or not? And that way we wouldn't have to take so much time of Greg's. And that way, anything that I had a question on, we can send the questions in advance by the 10th. And that way he can respond to us on the 17th, either orally or, in writing. But I'm assuming.
You know what I think would work? Because what I think we want to get to is one document where we've accepted what we can accept and where we have the comments and the questions where we're not ready to do that, right? So I think maybe the best way to do that is go through it. And if you're okay with the way that it reads right now, so if you look at the definitional sections or whatever, and if you're fine, then leave it the way it is. If you have comments or questions or concerns about anything in a particular provision, highlight it, put it in yellow, put it in green, drop your comments in. Once I get them all back, I can say, okay, all three of us have, nobody's got a comment on section A. So I'm just going to accept all that red line, and everybody has a question on B. So we're going to leave it there, and I can merge all the questions on B. So, because more than likely, I think, Greg, you're right. If we're going to be of the same mind, they're going to be the same provisions that we kind of maybe get hung up on or want to tweak. That way, when we get on, and I can provide that document, if you guys get it to me by the 10th, I can turn it around and I can provide it to him in advance of the 17th, and you'll all have them. So we'll know that really we're going into that meeting to talk about four things. Or five things, and the rest of it is clean and we're done with it. So it's off the table for conversation. That makes sense?
Works for me.
Okay. So you got an issue with a particular section on your version, highlight it, drop your comments in, finish the whole thing, send it to me.
So then just to think about the dates again, because we'll have to get a packet out for the 17th.
Mm-hmm.
When do you need to hear from the rest of the team here, Peggy?
By the 11th. Because hopefully what I'm doing then is just, I've got them both printed out in front of me.
Yeah. So that works. You guys already have the Word documents, Commissioner Gnofo and Sanat. So you should have what you need. Let me know if you need something else. But then if you want to send them to me or directly to Chair Dele, by the 11th, I think that that would serve well. And then Chair Daly, we can get a packet out by the 15th.
So you guys, what I went ahead and I did, just to make this a little bit more clear for me, is I went ahead and I put the entire document into a table. So on the left side is the language. In the middle column, we would be able to articulate approve, disapprove. And then in the third column, we would just put a question for Greg. Is that something that we can work with?
Totally. Greg, yep. What do you think?
Now, Don, the question may not be necessarily for him. It may be for us to work through. So,
right.
And that way it will simplify our conversation with him. That way we're not talking about things that we don't understand. We'll all be on the same page with respect to what are our issues or our questions.
And by the way, can I give you A+ for formatting skills?
Yes,
I'm going to screw that up, by the way. You're going to send it to me and I'm going to screw it up and it's going to come back in some other format. But
you'll be fine.
Send it back. You can send it to me either way, whatever works, because I can work with this and I can work with it just with the highlighting, however you want to do it.
Okay, no problem.
Can you send that to us though?
Absolutely. I'm going to do that right now.
Thank you.
I'm trying to make it pretty though. That's what you got to do. You got to add the pretty into it, you know? That way when it goes into the other pages, people can actually see what it is that you're talking about. So I'll go ahead, make this pretty. John, I need to send it to you and then you send it to them. Is that correct?
That's fine. Yep, we'll do it that way.
Okay, great.
All right.
Yep.
All right. I think we have a plan, right?
Yep.
All right. There's nothing else on our agenda, correct?
That's it.
All right. We need a motion to close the meeting.
Move to adjourn.
Second?
Second.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Good luck tomorrow.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Do we have a motion to wish you good health?
Thank you. Absolutely. I move for a great surgery and great health.
All right. Take care of yourself. All right.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.